Americans, we have to look at what's happening here. The environment is, the situation is appalling. Even Senator Stevens, who's very hostile to the environment, to judge from his position on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, is alarmed about climate change, alarmed about global warming, because he sees that for his state, Alaska, this could be very, very, very serious. And the whole North Slope especially, it's already melting. Now the Bush administration seems to be saying that they can't do anything about it, so we better go ahead because it's too expensive and so forth. They said the same thing about the Kyoto Treaty. It's too expensive. We can't afford to do that. We can't afford not to do that. I'm just astonished at the positions these people take, how short-sighted and how stunted they are. Everything seems to be about immediate gain. You know, if you took a hallmark of this administration, what it would be is that everything that suits the interest of corporate industry and companies, especially the ones that backed this administration, is good. But that is not a sound policy. And I'm astounded, really, at this stage of the game and at this stage of the election, that the American people seem to endorse an administration which, in my view, I don't want to put this too strongly, in my view, they're looting our country. They come on as a strong administration. They're actually a very weak administration. They're by far the weakest administration I've seen in my lifetime, which is already very long, 77 years. I understand why the people who are interested in their tax cuts and interested in their profits, they don't want to see it. I speak about this a great deal in public, and sometimes I get the most astonishing reactions of anger. And I had a man jump up at one of my talks, and he's expressed his view that I was imposing politics on an environmental speech that he had come to attend. I don't think you can separate politics from the environment. You can't separate anything. You can't separate Iraq from social structure, from society, or anything. It's all one composite. You can't isolate these things. I think the anger comes from the fact that these people who are holding out and supporting the Bush administration, supporting the indulgence of the very wealthy and the corporations, are doing that out of greed, and that they're ashamed of themselves. And if somebody like me, an old snoop like me, comes along and overturns the rock where they have to look at what they're doing, they're angry as hell. They don't want to look at what they're doing. They're doing great with Bush, just great. And they don't seem to care about the country. They don't seem to care about the future. It was like Reagan. They choose these rather photogenic, rather simple, uneducated men. Reagan and Bush have something very, to me, very striking in common. They're both extremely lazy. They don't do their work. It's very easy to stay the course if you only have one idea, which wasn't your idea in the first place, and turns out to be a very bad idea. And I think we know that these people have been gunning for Iraq for a long, long time. They've been wanting to control that oil for a long, long time. And I would say to all Americans, aren't you shocked? In today's paper, we discover that Mobil, Exxon, and other large corporations, the largest, Amoco, have been dealing in, they've been going around the sanctions in Iraq, and they've been making profits on enormously on oil. Is that patriotic, to double deal the administration, to double deal the country by dealing with Saddam Hussein? Look at Halliburton. They got this enormous no-bid contract, an enormous contract, and will be making millions and millions. And what did they do? As soon as they got there, they started cheating the government. Are these the people we want, first of all, leading our country? Because these are the people who control our country. These are the people who own the White House. In other days, the country would be up in arms, having been taken advantage of this badly, having been looted and misled and propagandized and exploited, all behind the waving flag, all behind our boys. Our boys are dying. I've been an environmentalist for over 50 years, and I have seen more reversal of progress, more damage done to the environment, far more than at any time in my life. Perhaps 30 or 40 years, by the time the smoke clears, these people will have turned, made a U-turn into the past. Is that what we need in a time of shortage of scarce resources like water, oil, all of these things? No, it really isn't. We can't afford an administration so hostile to our habitat, to our environment, to the place we live and we share with everything on the globe. Most good scientists, most scientists who aren't kept by the corporations, have really come down on the side of climate change and global warming. There's no question in the minds of the world about global warming, because everybody sees it. I was in the little kingdom of Mustang a few years ago, and that the capital, Romontang, is fed by one glacier, one small glacier, which you can see from the little town, which is up on the south side of the Tibetan Plateau. And they have two little streams coming down from that, and one they use for water and one they use for cleaning or whatever. And they all point to the ruins of the old town that had been there, and they said this was too big, and it died out. There wasn't enough water, and it died. And they said, we're going to die too, because that glacier is shrinking year after year. One-third of the people on this globe do not have enough fresh water and do not have clean fresh water. This is really appalling, and yet we are permitting corporations to own the fresh water. There's a French corporation in the Andes just taking over the fresh water there. People should not own fresh water. What is the difference between owning the fresh water and owning the air? Imagine if a corporation like Halliburton developed a way to channel the air. You know, we're gasping for breath. It seems ludicrous. It seems unthinkable. But why is the water less unthinkable? I think globalization really is, in principle, is, first of all, inevitable to a certain extent. But globalization is in the hands of big corporations who always will hide behind their stockholders. We are sorry, we would like to be environmentally conscious. We can't. And socially conscious, we can't, the stockholders. And so you have these enormous mammoth corporations like Walmart, for example, which is the largest customer of the new Chinese industry, which is about polluting China. I've been to China. I've traveled there. You should see China. You think we're bad. You should see the Soviet Union if you think we're, you know, appalling what can happen with industrialization completely out of control as it has been in those countries and is even here in certain places. It's not something we really want. If globalization was turned over to an international group that had some sort of environmental and social checks on it, so it stayed in, but like the checks and balances in our own government set up our own constitution, they're really wonderful. I would like to see the globalization, the whole movement under very, not restrictive control, but ethical control. Because there are no ethics here, as far as we can see. Big Oil has a lot to answer for in terms of their ethics and in terms of the damage they're doing. Big Oil and the automotive industry are the ones fighting hardest against supporting the Kyoto Protocol, which, by the way, was very weak. It was only a start in the first place. And to not support it when even Russia came through this spring and supported it, and now virtually every country in the world supports it, except for, guess which one? We're not even sure that globalization really works. If you look at the statistics, as usual, a small minority in each country is doing very well with globalization, but the great multitude of the people are still starving, working very, very hard to try to keep things together. We're pushing the little businesses out of existence, and we're doing that, and the corporations are doing this all over the world. That's part of the principles of globalization. So we haven't been told the truth about the real benefits of globalization. In theory, I'm not totally against genetically engineered food, because if you develop a better strain of rice or a better strain of wheat or something like that, it can be of enormous benefit. The trouble is, it's in the hands, yet again, of people like Monsanto, who have a terrible environmental record, a terrible social record, and profit is going to come first. And then immediately it becomes irresponsible. Then things are hidden, then things are, you know, they're not shown to the public. The American people have been deceived, and a lot of them are still deceived. I don't know whether they don't want to look at the truth, they don't want to read the papers, read the news, but they have been. Even the media, which we used to be able to count on for, you know, pointing the finger and cutting up and protesting and investigating, investigative journalism, so-called, even the media has largely copped out on this Iraq war and on this whole corporate ownership of the White House. They have not been tough enough, not nearly tough enough. And why? It's because they have been taken over by large corporations. And in the end, they have to jump when they're told to jump. And they have to suppress news that is embarrassing for the industry or the corporations that own them. I think the American people are very ethical people indeed, they're very generous people. But I don't think we have a great record of informing ourselves, of educating ourselves, and looking ahead. We simply don't. And so I think the only change that I've ever seen come, I remember I worked on a thing in Africa that worked very, very well indeed, because we worked through the children, the education of the children, improving our education system, can really work. I've seen wonderful scientific programs in the schools, in basic biology and so forth, chemistry, where the experiments are marvelously interesting, intriguing, and the kids love them. The kids love them. It's like exposing kids to all kids love animals. Exposing kids to wildlife early, they will always be in support of wildlife. And this is possible. I don't think we can change it in our generation because we say it's like changing something because you made a New Year's resolution. New Year's resolutions don't work very well. They're not ingrained. They're not in our feelings, in our heart. We know in principle that conservation is the right thing to do. But even some conservationists now, I think, very out of date. I'm no longer a conservationist, although I've written a lot about it, but I'm an environmentalist now because you can't just conserve. To illustrate how interwoven all of these problems are, look at just yesterday or the day before, the award of the Nobel Prize for the very first time, not merely to a woman from Africa, but also to an environmentalist, a terrific woman, Wangari Maathai, Maathai, I think it's pronounced. But anyway, she's been around for a number of years now, organizing the planting of trees in Africa. If you've traveled in Africa, you see appalling erosion everywhere, and most of the trees gone, this red earth cropping up. So what she's doing is terrifically important, but it's also served to empower the women to a wonderful extent. And she's a real hero. But it's, to me, thrilling that the Nobel Committee would choose this person, this African woman, and choose an environmentalist even more important. People assume the environment is just there. The environment, environmentalism, including global warming, is going to be by far the greatest problem of this century and the next one, because we've hammered it. It'll take us at least 20 years, maybe 30, to undo the damage to our environment. And this is where our children have to live, and this is where our grandchildren, God bless them, will have to live. And the whole world is in